It's Thursday, February 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, the European Union may have lost Britain, but it may soon have several new members. An unpredictable day in Congress may leave dreamers out in the cold, and SpaceX makes space history despite its founders' worries.
You know, I had this image of just a giant explosion on the pad with, you know, a wheel bouncing down the road. And like the Tesla logo landing somewhere with a thud.
Which is not at all what happened. That and more just ahead this next hour on VOA. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence said on Wednesday that the United States will soon announce increased economic sanctions against North Korea.
Let the world know this. We will continue to intensify our maximum pressure campaign until North Korea takes concrete steps toward complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization. To that end, I'm announcing today that the United States of America will soon unveil the toughest and most aggressive round of economic sanctions on North Korea ever.
Speaking after a meeting with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, Mr. Pence provided no details on what sectors the sanctions would cover or when they would be announced. Both Pence and Abe, at their meeting and then again in joint statements at the Prime Minister's official residence, spoke of strengthening the military alliance between Japan and the United States. Earlier in the day, at the Japanese Defense Ministry, Pence watched a PAC-3 interceptor missile battery's launcher raised to its firing position. Abe added that North Korea continues to engage in provocative actions, noting then an expected military parade in Pyongyang as the Winter Olympic Games get underway is scheduled for the same day in South Korea. The vice president is on a multi-stop trip to Northeast Asia that includes leading the U.S. delegation at the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang. Some North Korean athletes are participating in the games and will march under one flag with South Korea's delegation. VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman is traveling with the vice president and told our Sarah Williams about Mr. Pence's talks in the Japanese capital.
Well, there was a bit of a surprise, Sarah, in that the vice president made an announcement that the United States will soon roll out what he called the toughest and most aggressive sanctions ever against North Korea. He didn't give any details about what sectors the sanctions would cover or when they would be announced. Of course, there are already multiple sanctions by the United States, other countries, and the United Nations on North Korea, so we're all quite a bit curious to see exactly what this is going to entail.
What was the reaction from Japanese Prime Minister Abe?
Well, the Japanese Prime Minister is quite supportive of what the United States has been doing. He said they spent a good deal of time today talking about North Korea and that the policies of the United States and Japan are completely aligned. About Pyongyang, they both mentioned about the slight loosening of tension between North and South Korea. Of course, the North sending some athletes and officials to the Winter Olympic Games, which are getting underway in Pyeongchang in South Korea. Those games will be attended by the U.S. Vice President, but the Japanese Prime Minister warned that we shouldn't get our hopes up too high, noting that North Korea has a military parade plan for Thursday, which is the first day that there will actually be events at the Winter Olympic Games.
Well, Mr. Pence has indicated that he wants to, one of the reasons he's on this trip is he wants to provide, I guess, balance as opposed to the North Korean, what he would call propaganda, and is also, he is going to be accompanied by Fred Warmbier, who is the father of Otto Warmbier, who is the American college student who died after being jailed by North Korea.
Right. There's perception that having Mr. Warmbier alongside the U.S. Vice President, as a White House official put it, will remind the world of the atrocities that happen in North Korea. And yes, this is definitely a part of a campaign to counter what the White House is calling an attempt at a charm offensive by North Korea by sending athletes, officials, and even some cheerleaders and other entertainers to South Korea. And there's obviously quite a bit of attention about this in South Korea, some of it negative, but in some part this is being welcomed by a lot of South Koreans. So the vice president, by attending the Winter Games and being in Seoul on Thursday and meeting with the South Korean president, Moon Jae-in, definitely wants to keep on the agenda and in the headlines a reminder about the brutalities that have been committed by North Korea, and also to remind everybody that they're still pursuing this nuclear weapons and ballistic missile program.
VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman reporting from Tokyo, speaking with our Sarah Williams. U.S. officials, including Pence and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, also have not ruled out the possibility that the vice president might meet a North Korean official over the Olympics. The European Union, meanwhile, says that some Western Balkan countries could be ready to join the bloc in just 7 years. While warning such a step would require reforms on a huge scale, the European Union said it would nevertheless work toward bringing the Balkan region into its fold after years of on-and-off progress. VOA's Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Serbia and Montenegro could be full members of the European Union by 2025, announcing a new EU strategy towards the Western Balkan nations. European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said it is time to make a choice.
2025
is an indicative date only. It is only meant as an encouragement so that the states concerned work hard to ensure that they follow the path. A decision must be made. Either there will be expansion in the Western Balkans or there will not be. I would like the Western Balkans to be able to enter the European Union when the conditions are fulfilled.
The European Union is seeking to reinvigorate the membership ambitions of six states: Serbia, Montenegro, Albania, Bosnia, Kosovo, and Macedonia. Analysts say the migrant crisis brought home the strategic importance of the Balkans region. The European Union is seeking to reassert its power amid the growing influence of Moscow, among others.
At a popular level, Russia is commanding a lot of attention, respect, adoration even. And I think that that's a real worry. Turkey has been very active in the region as well. And of course, we see the growing estrangement between Turkey and the European Union. So that becomes a worry. China's been very active in the region.
Brussels has reiterated its membership demands, independent courts, freedom of the press, and tackling organized crime.
We've seen the backsliding, if you like, from Hungary and Poland in recent years. But also there's very important elements about how the single market functions, for example.
But the conflicts that followed the breakup of Yugoslavia remain. Just last month, an ethnic Serb politician was assassinated in Kosovo. Serbia refuses to recognize Kosovo's independence. The EU accession strategy rests on that being resolved. Kosovo's president expects progress soon.
I wouldn't talk about days, weeks, or months, but I think that 2018 is a crucial year and should be a decisive one. Otherwise, we will drag on for decades.
Brussels is hoping reinvigorated membership talks will persuade Belgrade to move forward.
The closer you bring Serbia to the European Union, the better it is.
Analysts say Brussels' aim is to also rejuvenate the bloc as Britain prepares to exit the European Union next year. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
And welcome back to VOA's International Edition, coming to you live from Washington. I'm Doug Bernard. It was an eventful day, to say the least, on Capitol Hill on Wednesday, even if we still don't know the full contours of all the events. First off, U.S. lawmakers grilled Trump administration officials on the U.S. presence in Afghanistan, saying the new White House strategy is inconsistent. It is not producing results. The comments at a Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing reflect glowing frustration about the U.S.-led war, which is now entering its 17th year. More now from VOA's Bill Gallo.
The U.S. military ramping up airstrikes in Afghanistan as the Trump administration expands the longest ever U.S. war. A U.S. B-52 on Tuesday dropped 24 bombs on the Taliban. The Pentagon says it's a record for the most guided munitions ever dropped from a B-52. All evidence of success, say U.S. officials.
On the battlefield, we're seeing the Taliban's momentum begin to slow. Afghan forces are now on the offensive.
Yet over the last month, Kabul has seen a wave of high-profile Taliban attacks, and insurgents now control or contest almost half the country.
Something clearly is not working. By any standard, the current security situation is grim.
At a hearing, senators from both parties criticized the current policy, and some took aim at President Trump, who last week said he doesn't want to talk with the Taliban.
That seems to be in direct contradiction to the position that you just articulated to this committee.
I think what President Trump was expressing was a reaction to the terrorist activities of the horrible terrorist activities last month in Kabul. Significant elements of the Taliban are not prepared to negotiate, and it may take a long time before they are willing to negotiate.
Yet patience in the U.S. Senate is running thin.
We're going to negotiate with the people who just exploded something? Obviously not. But then are there's a good guy form of Taliban meeting somewhere? We don't know that. We're in an impossible situation. And so I see no hope for it, and I feel sorry for putting the military in this position.
In Kabul, meanwhile, U.S. military officials say they'll continue taking the fight to the Taliban.
We will continue to bring the fight to the Taliban until they lay down their arms and reconcile with the Afghan government, or just simply be prepared to die.
A 16-year-old boy with no end in sight. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Washington.
Item the second, remaining on the Hill just one day before a threatened U.S. government shutdown, Senate leaders on Wednesday struck a bipartisan deal that would keep the federal government funded for 2 years, but also left contentious immigration topics unaddressed. VOA's Michael Bowman has that story.
If enacted, the accord would give Americans a 2-year reprieve from Washington's chronic fiscal drama and the threat of government shutdowns. The package would boost spending on national defense and domestic programs, ending years of budget caps Republicans argued were hollowing out America's military and Democrats said were harming the needy. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
The compromise we've reached will ensure that for the first time in years, our armed forces will have more of the resources they need to keep America safe.
Senate leaders were racing against the clock with federal funding set to expire at midnight Thursday. But not everyone is on board. House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi said she won't back the deal unless Republican Speaker Paul Ryan allows a vote on a bill to grant legal status to young undocumented immigrants.
What are you afraid of? Give us a vote. Let the House work its will.
Bipartisan immigration discussions have yet to strike a deal protecting immigrants brought to America as children who will be at risk of deportation next month. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
Now, whether the House and Senate can pass that budget deal may also hinge on the current immigration debate, which was referenced previously, and the fate of nearly 2 million undocumented workers brought to the U.S. when they were very young. The bad news, Congress appears no closer to finding a way forward on an immigration deal securing the status of these so-called dreamers. However, that could change within a few days. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports on an unpredictable day in Washington.
just as a budget deal appeared close on Capitol Hill, the president injected an element of uncertainty.
I'd love to see a shutdown if we don't get this stuff taken care of.
But unless Trump would be willing to reject a Hill-passed spending deal, the government will remain open, a point later clarified by the White House.
I don't think that we expect the budget deal to include specifics on the immigration reform.
Trump's threat is the latest sign the administration isn't serious, Hill Democrats said.
We had one Trump shutdown. Nobody wants another, maybe except him.
Following White House Chief of Staff John Kelly's suggestion that many Dreamers were too afraid or too lazy to sign up for the program. That had many Democrats asking if the administration's pledge to help them was genuine.
The people!
Time is dwindling for Dreamers. After the White House rejected a bipartisan deal from Senators Coons and McCain, drawing a warning from the Dreamers' champion in the Senate.
This isn't just a looming humanitarian crisis. It's an economic crisis as well.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's fulfillment of a promise to bring an immigration bill up for debate next week would just give an immigration deal an opportunity. The compromises made there could make for a tough road in the House.
We will take a bill that the president supports. So we look, put it this way. President Trump made a very serious and sincere offer of goodwill with the reforms that he sent to the Hill. That is what we should be working off of.
House Republicans remain hopeful the president's four-point immigration plan will pass.
I think the president, frankly, took the breath away from the Democrats a little when he essentially doubled the population that we're talking about and threw in path for citizenship. And the Democrats themselves had already put border security on the table. The other two things to me are reasonable, but they're also negotiable.
But negotiations are never a done deal on Capitol Hill, and Democrats don't appear close to an agreement with the White House.
So either the president does not understand the immigration laws he's trying to change, or he is intentionally misrepresenting them to the public in order to pass his own agenda.
A stalemate is likely to continue right up to the March 5th DACA deadline. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
This is Science in a Minute.
Two new but separate studies provide fresh insight into planets orbiting the nearby red dwarf star TRAPPIST-1. One of the studies, published in the journal Nature Astronomy, suggests the atmospheres of at least three of the seven TRAPPIST-1 exoplanets do not seem to be as hydrogen-rich as our solar system's gas giant planets, such as Neptune. Researchers involved with the study say that this finding means the planet's atmospheres may contain heavier gases like those found in Earth's atmosphere. The second study, published in the journal Astronomy and Astrophysics, contains detailed calculations of the masses as well as the density and makeup of all the TRAPPIST-1 planets. Researchers found that the planets are mostly rocky and contain up to 5% water. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're tuned to VOA's International Edition, coming to you live from Washington. One of the world's top investigators into the illegal ivory and rhino horn trade was recently found dead in his Nairobi home with a stab wound in his neck. He was known for undercover work that exposed illegal ivory traffickers and markets. Esmond Bradley Martin's research also led to China's ban of its legal ivory sales earlier this year. VOA's Mariama Diallo has details on the life and death of an environmental crusader.
The future for the African elephant can be quite encouraging.
The prominent American investigators spend decades tracking the movement of animal products, mostly from Africa to markets in Asia.
We have about 400,000 to 450,000 elephants in Africa. We're losing maybe 20 to 25,000 a year. Most of that seems to be going into China.
Although, at a conference in 2016, he warned the ivory trade was shifting from China to neighboring countries.
Now, the big difference between China and Vietnamese markets is the China market on the retail legal side, and perhaps on the illegal retail side as well, has been going down. But the Vietnam market has been absolutely booming.
The 75-year-old also said there were big ivory markets in Africa that needed to be shut down.
One can go to Angola and just see 23 tables with 10,000 pieces of ivory. It's completely illegal. And you see the same kind of thing in Nigeria, Egypt, Sudan, and sometimes Ethiopia.
While his work has helped crack down on poachers and exposed markets, he said more work was needed.
Burning is helpful if it gets more publicity and more resources and more people interested in decreasing the price, investigating who the illegal poachers are, who the traders are, and that type of thing. That's the important aspect of it.
According to Wildlife Direct, an organization focused on protecting elephants in Kenya, Esmond Bradley Martin's research helped uncover ivory traders in the United States, Africa, and Asia. His work was essential in China's decision to end its legal ivory sales, a ban that went into effect earlier this year. Smita Nordwall for Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and The Voice of America.
Finally today, if you happened to miss it yesterday, you missed a real show. SpaceX, the 16-year-old private space technology company founded by billionaire Elon Musk, successfully launched its largest rocket yet into space. The 27-engine, 70-meter-tall Falcon Heavy is currently on its maiden flight into an eventual solar orbit. Meeting with reporters after the launch, Musk said the rocket surpassed his expectations.
We're really excited about today. Incredibly proud of the SpaceX team. They've done an incredible job of creating really the most advanced rocket in the world and the biggest rocket in the world. I'm still trying to absorb everything that happened because it seems surreal to me. You know, I had this image of just a giant explosion on the pad with, you know, a wheel bouncing down the road and like the Tesla logo landing somewhere with a thud. But fortunately, that's not what happened. The mission seems to have gone really as well as one could have hoped.
The Falcon Heavy, launched from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, is actually three smaller Falcon 9 rockets bolted together side by side. It's designed to put more than 60 metric tons into a standard low orbit at a relatively economical cost of $90 million per launch. On board for this time was a Tesla Roadster off the assembly line of Musk's electric car company as a mock payload. Morris Jones, an Australian-based independent space analyst, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty that the Falcon Heavy, with 5 million pounds of thrust, is currently the world's largest rocket, though not the largest ever made. He said it is also cost-effective because so much of it is reusable. The question now, does this put SpaceX at the front of the line among burgeoning private astronautical firms for lucrative NASA contracts?
It should put SpaceX in line for some NASA contracts and public and private sector contracts. Whether or not NASA decides to embrace SpaceX more profoundly in the future remains to be seen, because exactly who gets launch contracts for NASA is a highly politicized process, and they'd like to share contracts around between different companies and different congressional districts. So I think politics will probably have a bigger role to play than the engineering.
Does this mission have any other purpose than just to test this massive rocket?
No, testing the rocket, showing that it works, is really the main objective. And any other thing, stunts you do, like launching a car into space, that's basically just icing on the cake.
So this will just be in orbit somewhere out in space in perpetuity.
It's orbiting the sun, not the Earth. And it's in an egg-shaped orbit that takes it between the orbit of Earth and the orbit of Mars. Now, they've been very careful to make sure that it won't actually travel too close to Mars or hit the planet Mars. But in theory, the orbit could keep it out there for millions of years.
Is the U.S. in the lead as far as public-private space exploration?
The U.S. is definitely the world leader in terms of the privatization of space exploration. And it's not just private rockets. It's satellite developers, services from satellites, such as communications and imaging. So in terms of getting everything going across every angle of space commerce, America is not just in the lead, but still in the lead by a very large margin.
Is this launch on Tuesday a turning point for SpaceX?
It's a major turning point for SpaceX because prior to this, they were a good rocket company, but in some ways, what they were offering was in the same class as what other companies could offer. This one is larger than anything else that anyone else has got. So at this point, SpaceX doesn't just become a serious company. It becomes a Mike Tyson of the space world.
Meanwhile, SpaceX, having logged a series of successful launches after a launch pad failure in early 2016, is currently developing an even larger rocket called the BFR, or Big Falcon Rocket, that Musk hopes to send paying tourists into space. Well, many thanks for joining us for International Edition this day. Up next, the latest world news, so stay tuned for that. For all of us in Studio 25, Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm Doug Bernard. We'll see you again tomorrow.
An international public service announcement by the United States government.
The United States has expanded its offer of rewards for information on key leaders of terrorist organizations to include a leader of one of the groups conducting attacks on government facilities and other targets in northern Nigeria, roiling the nation in sectarian violence. Abu Bakr Shekau is the leader of the group commonly known as Boko Haram, a Nigeria-based extremist organization seeking to overthrow the current government there and replace it with a regime based on a strict interpretation of Islamic law. Links with terrorist groups such as Al-Qaeda and Al-Shabaab have strengthened Boko Haram's capacity to conduct its attacks. Previously, the group's number two, Shekau claimed overall command in July 2010, expressing solidarity with Al-Qaeda and threatening the United States. A vehicle bomb attack on the United Nations headquarters in Abuja in August 2011 marked the group's first lethal operation against Western interests, killing at least 23 people and injuring 80 others. In April 2012, the group bombed a Nigerian newspaper office in Abuja and later threatened other local and international news outlets, including The Voice of America. Under his leadership, the group has kidnapped hundreds of children to serve as hostages, bearers, and even fighters. Shekau is tall, slim, and has a dark complexion. He was born in Yobe, Nigeria, sometime between 1965 and 1975, and is of the Kanuri ethnicity. He speaks Arabic, Hausa, Fulani, and Kanuri. He is known to have used the aliases Abu Bakr Sikwa and Imam Abu Bakr Shekau. The Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $7 million for information leading to Shekau's location. The U.S. promises that all credible reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them and their families. If you have information on this man, contact the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate or submit a tip to www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to info@rewardsforjustice.net. You may also call the Rewards for Justice tip line at 1-800-877-3927.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.